I became aware of a problem in filming theatrical stereoscopic motion pictures on set. I moved to the Hollywood area about 7 years ago, and prior to that I was involved in designing systems for engineers and scientists. But being in the film business has been a very interesting experience, and I've been on set and I've watched how motion pictures are shot using beam splitter rigs. Beam splitter rigs are the current generation of beam splitter rigs spring from work that was done by Floyd Ramsdell in the 40s. And they are big, they're cumbersome generally, and they're off-putting to the cinematographers and the directors. But why they're important is because they can allow for stereoscopic cinematography with reduced interaxial separations, lower than the interocular distance. This is important because when you're projecting on a big screen, the parallax values, which are a function of image magnification, can become very large, and the images can be unwatchable. In the 50s, when the first major polarized light stereoscopic boom occurred, the theater screens were half the width that they are today. Not only that, people sit a lot closer to the screen, so it becomes very demanding. Stereoscopic cinematography is very difficult. So the problem really is, how can you produce a reduced interaxial stereoscopic effect? And also, really, and this is very important for the acceptance of the motion picture industry and the creative professionals, how do you make a camera that looks and feels like a camera, not like a great big contraption? If it works. Okay, so here's the basic concept. Now, this is sort of, I got to talk both ends against the middle because I have to explain the lens and then the image sensor. So imagine we have a lens, and the lens is represented by 1 and 2. It's a complex lens, and it's split up in two parts, so I can show you where the aperture is. There's an aperture structure, 3, with two apertures, 4 and 5. Apertures 4 and 5 have polarized light passing through them. There are sheet polarizers in association with 4 and 5. And over here we have a polarization layer, which is an interdigitated polarizer, the kind of micropolarizer, same basic idea that's used for displays, for like the LG display. That's the basic concept. So you've got a lens, and you've got two apertures, which are horizontally offset, and you've got their rays, which are polarized and mixed and separated at the sensor. The idea of using this kind of an optical system, that is with two apertures and one lens, that's not new. People have used that for endoscopes and other imaging applications, but they've used time multiplexing or field sequential capture, which we can't do in the motion picture business because the images, if they're captured out of sync or out of phase, they look terrible when you project them because you create a spurious temporal parallax artifact. So the thinking here is, how do you reduce the interaxial separation when the cinematographers want to shoot with super 35 millimeter sensors? Super 35 millimeter sensors are relatively large, and they're the gating item, or all the design flows from the size of the sensor. You can say, you can talk about the size of the camera, you can talk about the size of the lens, but everything derives from the size of the sensor. So as long as you've got sensors that the cinematographers want to use, they want to use those sensors because they have the depth of field characteristics that they're used to. They use depth of field in a creative way, and they insist upon having a certain size sensor because depth of field optically derives from the size of the sensor. Okay. So let's take a look at what's happening at the sensor. And at the sensor, this is a Bayer pattern sensor, and here is the underlying photosites, and then you've got these color matrix filters. And on top of it, you've got polarizers. And there are various schemes here. What I'm presenting now is didactic, and there are other ways you can skin this cat. There are all kinds of ways you can make it work. So you've got one characteristic of polarization, another characteristic of polarization, covering a triad, which in this case, for a Bayer pattern, is actually four pixels or four photosites. And these would be linear polarization. There's no reason to use anything but linear polarization because it has the highest extinction. So the axes of the gray and the white polarizers are orthogonal. And in this way, if you go back to, let's see if I can make it do it. If I can't go back, I can go forward. Okay, if you go back to this, you can see you've got polarized light. The polarized light from here and here, they're orthogonally. The axes are orthogonal, and so they can be selected here. So you wind up with sacrificing half the resolution, but you've got half of the pixels producing one perspective and the other half producing the other perspective, and it may not be a sacrifice if you use the right debayering algorithm. This is in concept of how the aperture would work. So you've got an aperture body, you've got two openings at 2 and 3, and you've got sheet polarizers whose axes are orthogonal. So it's a very simple concept. You could use something like Waterhouse stops. If people are familiar with photography, the history of photography, people have made something called Waterhouse stops, which are not iris diaphragms. They have holes punched in metal, usually, and you slide them in and out of the lens. So you could make this work, but cinematographers wouldn't like it because it's a pain in the neck. What you really want to do is have a way to continuously variable aperture. Also, you could see here, you could change the interaxial separation by changing the distance between the openings. Okay, so what I've conceived of is a polarizing electro-optical aperture. So, and I'll get to the structure of that aperture in a little bit. So we have some kind of a pixel array, one for one half of the lens and one for the other half. The aperture is at the lens's nodal point where apertures usually are. And you can turn these pixels on and off. There are various schemes for addressing pixels. There are ways to address them edge addressed. But here I'm just going to assume we're using the same kind of pixel addressing that's used for displays. So you can turn them on. You can create, obviously, this is a low resolution aperture here for didactic purposes. So you can turn these pixels on and off, and you can create different apertures, distances, and different shapes. I'm going to talk about that in a little bit. Okay, here is the electro-optical polarizing aperture. It's an electro-optical aperture in two parts. There were two liquid crystal devices, and it'd be a lot to explain, and you can read about it in the paper. But what it will do is it will allow you to animate or create a left and right aperture. These apertures would have different shapes. They don't have to be circles. They can't be circles, but you can create, in principle, any opening you want with any distance apart. So I come back to the original diagram where alpha is the interaxial separation. Now you have to understand that a lot of the photography that's done in the motion picture business for large screen could be at 10 or 15 millimeters or even less. And that's the reason, as I come back to it, for the beam splitter cameras. That's why you can't. That's why you have to have these beam splitter cameras. That some you may be familiar with the design of these beam splitter cameras, but I'm not going to go into it now. So you can see there are all kinds of issues with regard to this design. Although it may allow you to produce variable interaxial distances, which could be varied during the shot, and aperture shapes that you don't have to have a circular aperture. You can have various aperture shapes. Obviously, the amount of light that's transmitted to each perspective has to be, in the best case, half of that which would be transmitted by the entire lens. So if you had a T1-4 lens, it couldn't do any better than T2 for each perspective. So you're going to lose half your light. You're also going to lose light because you're using polarization for image selection. So you're going to lose down to, you know, you may be down to something like 15 or 30% of the light. I'm not sure what the number is right now. But modern sensors that are the size of a Super 35 offer tremendous sensitivity. Right now, the nominal sensitivity of the Alexa, the RED cameras, are 800 ISO equivalent. And in the next few years, it may be very much more. There are all kinds of other issues with this design that we really don't know about until we try to build it. Or we have some people who know a lot more about the various individual disciplines here than I do. So I've presented this. I'll speak, you know, personally for the moment. I don't feel like starting another company. I'd rather license this and find somebody to build it. I believe the film industry needs something like this. Unlike a number of other schemes, it would directly produce images that the cinematographer and the director could look at on set. Oh, there are a number of other issues that could be fixed with proms or lookup tables, because if you're looking from different corners of the lens, there's going to be asymmetrical aberration, which could all be fixed in, not in post-production, they could be fixed in the camera. So let me see, what else can I think of? I'm going to take questions.
Okay.
So, you know, there were many, many issues that would need to be addressed in order to make something like this work, but it would have the form factor of a normal cinematography camera. It would look like an Alexa, it would look like a Red, and it would use the normal accessories, and it would use the workflow that's been established for a stereoscopic cinematography, so it would fit in very neatly. Okay, first question.
Thank you, Letty. Interesting idea. First question?
Yes, thank you. I'm Luis. My question was both in at the same time. To what extent the lens width you are thinking of,
okay,
and what to what extent the sizes?
Okay, well,
width,
the
you're thinking of.
That's a good point. The raison d'être for this is that you want reduced interaxial separations. On the other hand, you want some flexibility. So this would require some new lens design. At the nodal point, you'd have to optimize the diameter of the lens in order to give you a lot of flexibility. So this, it would require new lenses and new lens designs. They could zoom, or they could be primes.
Any other questions? Well, I have one in the meantime while you guys are thinking about it. Obviously, Lenny, you're using electro-optical modulators, which could be run time sequentially, as people have done in the past, by having alternate sides going on and off, and then you capture the image in a time sequential manner. But is there some particular reason why you don't want to do that?
Yeah, it's totally unacceptable for theatrical cinematography, or even for taking home movies of your baby. If you capture the images out of phase, the result is that you will generate spurious temporal parallax based on the horizontal vector of motion of the... It's a terrible, terrible result. You may be able to use it for some scientific instrumentation, but for live-action cinematography, it looks terrible.
Yeah,
so you really have to capture the images and present them. You have to capture them simultaneously. If you're shooting a vase or something sitting on a table, it doesn't really matter. The cameras don't even have to be in sync. But if somebody's moving their hands the way I am, or blinking, or a football game, certainly, it's going to look terrible. Now, the funny thing is that you can present or project the images out of phase. As Jones and Shercliffe demonstrated in SMPTE, I think it was just the SMPE. Pardon me? Yeah, it was in the SMPTE paper. Very good work has been done on this. And the images can be projected out of phase to some extent. But once you get beyond a reasonable tolerance, it looks terrible. But you can't make a general purpose camera for shooting normal action in this universe and expect anybody to like what you get out of it if the images are captured out of phase. They have to be captured in synchrony.
Ray?
Ray?
So if you have a 4K sensor, then theoretically this could be used to end up with a 2K resolution, which is standard in cinema, correct?
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is we know that the debayering, as it is used by the camera manufacturers, is a secret art. Also, if you had the right kind of pattern and the right kind of algorithms, you could take advantage of something called diagonal sampling. So I think that you could wind up with having more than half the resolution. But you're right, if you start off with a higher resolution sensor, then you would wind up back to where you need to be.
Mm-hmm.
There's a question right back there.
What kind of non-circular aperture could be useful for stereoscopic cinema?
I couldn't quite understand every
what
word.
What kind of non-circular apertures? You were talking of non-circular.
Well, that would require a lens design study, but in one case, for example, you could have semicircular apertures. The idea here is that you want to get an interaxial separation that you desire, but you also want to pass the maximum amount of light. So you can, many cameras have been designed, or many lenses have been made that have non-circular apertures. So it is a certain a possibility to optimize the light, and because if you stick with circular apertures, if you stay with circular apertures, you will reduce the t-stop of each perspective a lot.
Any other questions? Well, then let's take this opportunity to properly thank our speaker. Thank you, Lenny.
Thank you.